The following is a class from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 10th chapter, verse number 16, given by His Divine Grace, Srila Satsarup Das Goswami Gurupad, on the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra, April 18, 1986, in Tokyo, Japan.
Goswami said, after constructing a bridge over the ocean by throwing into the water the peaks of mountains whose trees and other vegetation had been shaken by the hands of great monkeys, Lord Ramachandra went to Lanka to release Sita Devi from the clutches of Ravana. With the direction and help of Vibhishana, Ravana's brother, the Lord, along with the monkey soldiers, headed by Sugriva, Nila, and Hanuman, entered Ravana's kingdom, Lanka, which had previously been burnt by Hanuman. All right, now you can please read the purport. Vishnupadaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschata De Satarane. So today is the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra, who is one of the principal incarnations of Lord Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains his own reason for appearing in this world. Ida ida hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. He says, in every age when religion is being when religion is in decline and when irreligion is on the uprise, I appear. He says, Paritranaya sadhanam vinishaya shidispitam. And when I come, I destroy the demon and I protect my devotee. So this is also the mission of Lord Rama. When he appeared, the demons were headed by a very powerful demon, Ravana. And the particular abuse to the devotee was to Lord Rama's own wife, Sita, who had been kidnapped by Ravana. So this is the how Lord Rama fulfilled the mission as described of avatar as described in Bhagavad Gita, because he killed Ravana and destroyed his kingdom and he rescued Sita. This is all described in the Vedic scripture Ramayana. Sometimes in India especially, people ask us, why do we worship Krishna more than Rama? But we do not say that Krishna is better than Rama or Rama is better than Krishna. According to the actual science of God, Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and so Rama and other incarnations expand from Krishna. So there is no argument about Krishna and Rama. But the argument is between the devotees of the Supreme Lord and the atheists. The atheistic person does not believe that there is a supreme being or a supreme controller. There are different kinds of atheists. Some are called agnostic, some are outright atheists, and some say that there is only an impersonal existence of God. There are even so-called religions which are actually atheistic. That means that they follow some codes of morality and have some sub-religious principles, but they do not actually know what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah. As far as I know, I think the religions of Japan, like Buddhism and Shintoism, are more or less atheistic. So Srila Prabhupada explains that persons are atheistic because of a poor fund of knowledge. The atheistic person, when they hear the account of Lord Rama or Lord Krishna, they call this mythology. Make-believe stories. They think that every different culture or nation has some different make-believe stories that express some truths, but they're not to be taken as literally true. However, in the Vedic scriptures, the science or philosophy of religion is given. Vedic scriptures, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. If someone carefully reads Srimad Bhagavatam, he cannot say, oh, these are just make-believe stories. Therefore, we call it science of God. Just as in science, you cannot deny the facts. For example, that water is made up of two elements, some hydrogen, two parts hydrogen, and one part oxygen. Because if you take those elements and mix them, you will get water. Therefore, people have to actually study Srimad Bhagavatam to understand the existence of God. But the atheistic people, they're actually very dogmatic. That's not the same. Their own beliefs or... But if someone approaches with an open mind, then he will be able to understand. Another reason the atheist does not want to study this is because he is actually envious of God. Because God means a supreme authority over you. God also means that there are laws of God that you have to follow. God also means that there is a next life after this life where sinful activities will be punished. And God also means that he should be worshipped as the supreme beloved. Envious, atheist, he does not want to accept any of these things. They are a great threat to him. He wants to think that he is the one who should be worshipped, and that he can do whatever he likes without punishment. Yesterday we were speaking about how the governments are generally not favorable to Krishna consciousness. So similarly, the government wants to receive the ultimate respect and worship. They'll be envious if they accept that God is to be the actual controller and owner of everything, not the government. Just like the great atheist who founded communism, Karl Marx. He one saying of his is that religion is the opium of the people, is the opium of the people, intoxicating drug. This means that such materialistic persons, they are eager to see that everyone is working very, very hard for sense gratification. Japan is a extreme example of this. The people work very hard and they take very, very seriously their material occupation. When I rode in the car with Prabhupada from the airport to Tokyo on his visit, he made that remark. By seeing all the factories and buildings, he said, I can understand these people are great karmis. So the Karl Marx saying means that the karmi fears that the religion may distract you from being a industrious worker. According to that saying by Karl Marx about the opium, he is afraid that if people take to religion, it will distract them from being industrious workers. Therefore, for such people, actually work and things connected to work is the highest religion. In Sanskrit, these activities are called dharma, artha, and kama. They are all materialistic activities. Dharma means religion, but for the karmi, religion is also a material thing. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna a question about this. He says, my dear Lord, if a person doesn't follow you according to the scriptures, but does something else, is he considered to have any religion? Lord Krishna says, yes, everyone has a kind of religion according to what they worship. He says, those who are in the mode of ignorance, they worship ghosts and evil spirits. Those in the mode of passion, they worship great persons of this world or demigods. So therefore, those persons who say they are atheists and who deride religion, they actually have a religion of their own. We should not be afraid or embarrassed when we are given such challenge by atheists that religion is make-believe. But rather we can reply, as Lord Krishna replied to Arjuna, that you people, you also have your religion. But your religion is all in ignorance and does not free you from misery. Just see how the karmis, they rise so early and they go to work. That is a kind of worship. So if I mentioned dharma is the following of any kind of materialistic ritual or religion. Such people, they may have some gods or they may have some shrine that they go to, but the real purpose is something material. Now, perhaps one of you can tell me the meaning of something I saw yesterday at a Shinto shrine. The people go and they throw money in a
material giving
well, like past money, examinations and things like that.
Yeah.
Family.
Happy
happy family.
There are many, many little wooden plaques hanging. What is those plaques for?
That's please make me pass an examination of this university, or please protect my family. You know, everybody's right desire and put on.
So you see, that is the idea of dharma, that there's some religion, there's a priest, there's a temple, but it's all material. And so that is called in after dharma, then the next stage, according to Vedic science of God, is called artha. It's really performed for artha, or economic development. Money, economic development. If there is God, or if there are gods, they approach him to pray for material things. So why does one work hard for economic development? That is explained in the next stage as kama. That's not karma, but kama. So these activities you can see. After the day's work, he wants to enjoy himself. Srimad Bhagavatam says that the foolish karmi, he spends his time at night either in sex enjoyment or sleeping. And in the day, he is simply anxious, where is money? So it is very unfortunate where all over the world, all the countries, people are actually misled in this way. We say misled because if your activities of dharma, artha, and kama are your only activities, you will never be free from the miseries of life. People don't even realize that you can become free of the miseries of birth, death, disease, and old age. But if a person is more intelligent, then they are not satisfied just by these material religions and making money and enjoying the senses. Such persons, they go on to the fourth stage of human civilization, which is called moksha, or liberation. This means that one inquires, is there a way to become free from all this material suffering? So this is advanced, but it is also not the stage of spiritual knowledge. Lord Buddha, for example, taught this approach to this stage by teaching nirvana. He could understand that all material activities will bring suffering, and therefore the suffering is caused by desire, and desire should be stopped. But he did not teach the knowledge of the soul or the supreme personality of Godhead. And without understanding the soul and the supreme person, you cannot actually attain moksha or liberation. So we who are Krishna, who have joined Krishna consciousness, we should never consider that this movement is something relative. Never think that it is just one of many religions. You will find in the Bhagavad Gita things that are also in other scriptures. In the Bhagavad Gita, teachings that are found in other scriptures also. But also, there are teachings in the Bhagavad Gita that cannot be found anywhere else. So we are very fortunate to have received this knowledge by which we can become free of all these misconceptions of life, by which you waste your life in material work or by following a material religion or simply by speculating about spiritual life without any authority. We are preaching surrounded by so many non-devotees. So therefore, to remain free of contamination, we have to stay very fixed. And that we will do by always chanting and hearing. You have to, as much as possible, hear the holy name of the Lord and chant the holy name. And hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Then we will understand that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and Krishna is in everyone's heart. So when we serve Lord Krishna by following the orders of the spiritual master, then Krishna will give us the intelligence not to fall into doubt or contamination, not to think, I am this body, I am man, I am woman, I am Japanese, I am American, but I am spirit, soul, eternal servant of God. I think I will stop here. I hope there are some questions.
asking how we can 100% fight back against the Maya. That means that we have to realize the super soul. Then we can very 100% strong enough to fight against Maya.
How? Is that a question? How can we do that?
Yes.
How can we surrender to super soul 100%?
No, he's saying, he's thinking when he can realize the super soul, then he become strong enough to fight against Maya. He's thinking like that. Is that all right?
Well, you don't have to wait until you become perfectly realized in super soul. Actually, because Krishna is infinite, we can never know him 100%. So, but Krishna is very kind, and he makes himself available to us. So the super soul, he is also sometimes called the guru within. He will teach you what to do from within your heart. But in order to take constant dictation from Krishna in the heart, you have to be very advanced and pure. If we try to listen to a voice within, sometimes the voice we hear will be the voice of Maya. Therefore, Krishna advises that you also accept a guru as a devotee who is the spiritual master. If you want to fight Maya, you cannot say, I will follow the super soul, I don't need a spiritual master. Because the spiritual master, he will guide you in such a way that you can fight Maya. And spiritual master means one who himself has surrendered to Krishna and has surrendered to his spiritual master. If you strictly follow a guru and Krishna, then you will be able to be free of Maya. Does that answer the question?
She's asking, if one becomes really pure devotee, and then her ancestors also liberated, yes? But that liberation means go back to Krishna or go back to Brahmajyoti, or where what does actually liberated mean? Liberation means?
Well, ultimate liberation means to go back to the Godhead, to the spiritual planet. So it depends on the strength of the devotee, whether he can liberate his ancestors to Brahmajyoti or to the spiritual planet. In the Vedic religion, there is a practice where they pray, where they offer prasadam, and pray that the ancestors' souls may get at least a human body in case those ancestors are in a ghost condition or sinful condition. That practice is of offering for the ancestors is called Shraddha. But in Krishna consciousness, we don't have to perform such separate prayer. If you become a pure devotee, then you can liberate ancestors back to the spiritual world. And not only family ancestors, but the devotee of Lord Chaitanya, he tries to help everyone because he sees that he is related to all souls. These persons who I now consider my mother and father, that is only a connection by karma. Therefore, the devotee, sometimes for this reason, they take sannyas. Because then the sannyasi, he leaves his immediate family and he sees all humanity as family. All as brothers and sisters.
Me, Krishna,
Now we worship in Gauranitai, no installed, yes? But we soon gonna have installed deities. So even those no installed deities is Krishna inside. I mean, so but not even installed, we're worshipping.
Yeah.
So that means that Krishna is in
especially Gornitai make themselves easy to approach as the deity. So if you worship the deity of Gornitai, even if it is not installed by the full Vedic ceremony, as long as you perform regular worship with devotion, then that is actually Gornitai. The important thing is the regular devotion by offering prasadam and by holding kirtan before the deity. This is more important than the initial ceremony of installation. When Srila Prabhupada began the ISKCON movement, he would install even Radha Krishna deities with very simple ceremony. And even when he opened the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, he said that he wanted to keep it simple. He said, we would have been satisfied to install the deities by having a big kirtan and put them on the altar. But the Hindu Brahmins, they want to see many, many rules followed before they will accept that this is a bona fide deity installation. So when you have your installation, try to do it with opulence. Buy nice things for the deity. So now he said that soon they're going to have an installation. So I can at least, since you are going to have an installation, I can point out some things I remember Prabhupada said as the important parts of installation. Even if you don't follow all the ceremonies according to the Hindu caste Brahmins, be opulent. Opulent means according to your own standard of what money you have. But you should spend lavishly. Buy flowers and to buy nice paraphernalia to offer the deity.
Yeah.
And there should be very gorgeous dress for them.
Yeah.
And then gather many devotees and friends and hold much kirtan.
Yeah.
And then you have to promise to keep up an enthusiastic standard deity, when you install the deity, that you will continue to worship at a good standard. If after installation you lose your enthusiasm, that is a great offense. You're asking the Lord, please come and appear in the deity and we will worship you. If later the devotees think, oh, it is too much effort to worship the deity, then that is offense. Don't doubt that he actually is there. So serve him with enthusiasm. You'll be able to realize more how Krishna or Lord Chaitanya is actually present in the deity.
Today the fasting through the moonrise, what does that mean? Because sometimes I hear different opinions about how long we should fast. I just wonder if you
Do you want to translate that? On the Vaishnava calendar, there are many days which are mentioned as fast days. So the controversy may be whether we have to follow all of them. There may be some controversy. So some of these are more important than others. So this day is one of them, because even when things were very simple, as introduced by Prabhupada in the opening years, still we observed this fast, Ramchandra appearance day, no eating till moonrise. Therefore, I think the senior devotees and the consulting with the GBC, they can decide the standard to follow for their temple of which days to fast. We don't want to disrupt unnecessarily these Sankirtan activities. But certain fasting days have to be observed also.
Sorry, does that mean?
Well, technically, according to astronomy, there is an exact time when the moon rises, and you may get that from some manual or newspaper.
Yeah,
I always
simply
follow that. Not that you have to wait and see it.
No, sometimes I hear the moon.
The moon rises at 11 in the morning?
Yeah, well,
yeah, sometimes, yeah.
So
it's always been kind of a controversial point.
Yeah, then it should be at least late afternoon, 4 or 5
that's
o'clock.
What I'm thinking, yeah.
Moonrise should be like that.